All right, so we're here at the last session of Kinect. I'm talking to this camera since they're the ones watching. Thanks for coming. I'm assuming it's all of the C++ peeps. Talked to you last night on Twitter. I hope you're here. We have an excellent panel. And, you know, let's just get started. I mean, so Jim Radigan is here. We have Steve Carroll is here. Of course, Herb Sutter's here. I'm going to let you guys introduce yourselves and tell people a little bit about what you do on the C++ team.
Okay, my name is Jim Radigan. I am the dev manager for the CodeGen Technologies team. We take care of all of the native and managed code generation for the Windows platform.
Oh, and I'm Steve Carroll. I'm the dev manager for the C++ team. So that covers things like the IDE. It covers the front end of the compiler. Basically, C++ comes in, and then we compile it into an intermediate REST representation, hand it off to Jim to link and compile. I own the graphics tools, the libraries, and static analysis.
Awesome.
And I'm Herb Sutter. I do language work, and I participate a lot in standardization, have done for going on 20 years now, yeah. Last 13 of them here at Microsoft. And so I live and breathe cross-platform, and it's just really exciting to see the stuff that's been happening, and including that was just announced in the last couple of days, that we're continuing to do with cross-platform work for C++. So
absolutely.
Exciting times.
It's amazing. It really is incredible. And so one of these things is GDB. I know you guys have done some work there. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
So actually, we started getting into GDB debugging actually about a year ago, I'd say. We really started in earnest, and where we did some work to try to enable being able to debug Android and iOS applications from Visual Studio. And so what we've announced recently is we've taken those bits, which we've actually open sourced, something called MI Engine, which you can get up on the Microsoft GitHub account.
Okay.
There's the MI Engine, which is able to talk from Visual Studio through GDB, and we use it for Android and iOS, and now we've sort of opened that up more broadly so that people can just use that thing to talk to things like Linux and any other app, any other platform that uses GDB as its standard debugger.
So speaking of speaking to Linux, there's a lot of these little devices that are pretty much everywhere now, and they're generally running Linux.
Sure, or even less than Linux, like microcontrollers often aren't really running an operating system at all, right? Which is the they're really just these very tight event loop driven kind of scenarios.
Sure. Right? So why don't we actually see some of this, huh?
Great.
So let's introduce Mark Goodner, who's a developer or program manager. Architect, however you want to be titled.
Program manager.
Depends on the
it's
day
all
of
the
week.
Same
yeah,
now.
Yeah. Maybe it is the day of the week, yeah.
So what are you going to show us?
So I'm going to show you the new GDB debugger extension that we released yesterday.
Awesome.
So I'm going to start off and just kind of show you what happens after you install this. You get a new project type that comes in under Visual C++ cross-platform, and there's a new makefile project called GDB. And if I go ahead and create one of those in a more reasonable location, then what you get is basically a new project type that gives you a little guide about how to get started, about how to actually configure the project properties on this guy. And I have another project that we can go ahead and open up that is already configured. So we can actually see this in action. It's actually connected to a Raspberry Pi. And so this project has a simple C file in here that's using Wiring Pi, which is a common API on the Raspberry Pi for interacting with the GPIO pins on the device. And if I go to the project properties, you'll see how this connection works. We've added on the debugging tab, we've got a debugger to launch, and I've got remote GDB or local GDB. Local GDB would be interesting if you wanted to debug with another alternate engine, like if you were compiling with GCC on Windows, for example. But in this one, we've got remote. So I've got a remote host name here that I'm specifying, my username. We connect with SSH. So I've got my private key that I've set up here and the shell executable that I'm using. Here I'm using PLink. You can also use OpenSSH. Hmm. There's a new Win32 port of OpenSSH that works with this as well.
Cool.
And then you specify the remote working directory where things are, your remote executable, and then how you actually launch GDB. So if you wanted to use something else like LLDB, then you could plug that in here instead of GDB. And also, you'll note that on this one, I'm saying sudo, and I'm saying sudo because I'm accessing the GPIO pins, so I need to be super user in order to do that on Linux. And then the other thing you'll notice is that on the directories, I've got my include path specified here for the Wiring Pi library, so I've got IntelliSense and everything in Visual Studio. And finally, on the make tab, this is how we actually get things over to the device because I'm not doing cross-compiling on Windows. I'm actually building on the Raspberry Pi. And so I've got a command here that I'm scripting to actually copy the files over to the Raspberry Pi using the properties from that page. And then I use the properties again from that page to connect to the device again, change the remote working directory where I'm at, and actually build using GCC. And so, and of course, I'm actually specifying the flag so that I get my debug symbols.
We're super cross-plat in this demo.
It's crazy. And
yeah, totally. And so now, if I go ahead and execute, I can just go ahead and hit F5. And this will initialize the debugger over to the device. It takes a moment. Now, you'll see that I'm actually debugging, but I'm not actually stepping through any code or anything yet. But if I come over here and I press a button, you can actually see that I've hit a breakpoint from pressing a button on my breadboard. And now if I hit F10, the LED lights up on the breadboard.
That's right.
And
blinking
so
lights are the new hello world, right?
Yeah, blinking lights, hello world. And so now I can set another breakpoint when it turns off and I can hit continue. And you can see that I'm stepping through. And there we go, and now it's off. And so part of the reason we're doing this is actually about Azure, to try and make it easier to connect to the Azure IoT hubs. Mm-hmm. And so this directory here is actually, I've set up Samba on my Pi. So this is actually running on the Pi. And so if I go to my source directory here, I have the Azure IoT SDK that I've synced down. And I've made my own sample in here underneath this one. So I can come down here. And now you can see I've got some C files here, and I've set up a Visual Studio project, and this is all on the Pi. And so when I open that up, wait for it to load. And now we come in and you see that I've got the IoT library specified in here. And I actually have nice IntelliSense to actually work with the library and everything and make it a lot easier to get these sort of applications made to actually talk to Azure.
Awesome. So sending like data from sensors up to a data lake.
Exactly.
Some machine learning on it.
Yes.
Send more information down to a bunch of other devices.
Yes.
Really very impressive. I mean, where are we? What's going on here? This is the, we're using what? Stallman's debugger. We're running on Linux. I mean, this is a wonderful time. The other thing is, this is C.
This is C.
So we're going to kind of move away now. I mean, it's a really cool demo.
C.
But we got to talk about C++. I mean, he's a C guy. No offense. But no, this is, thank you so much for that demo.
Absolutely.
Look, does anybody have questions? I know you're out there. I mean, I know for a fact there's going to be a couple Niners out there. Ask some questions. Of course, Felix Nine asked the first one. And this, of course, is for Jim. So Jim Radigan said, new CPU architecture support coming in the fall. Now where is the announcement?
Well, it depends on how you define fall. We're really close, right?
Okay.
I think a couple of things are probably going to go out on GitHub that'll give it away. But right now, I can't say anything. But I did say that. I did. That was. I set that at build, and
you did.
It is still fall, so I'm not late.
You're right. It is still fall. It's fall until when? Sometime in November. All right. So
fall is actually.
Do you have anything? Fall has slipped.
Yeah.
Love it.
Well, the second question is definitely a Steve question.
So all right. So when will C++ be fully C++ 11, 14, 17 standards compliant? And that's from Anton Mueller,
right.
And that's for both of you guys, for sure.
Yeah.
But let's. What's going on?
Your team did a lot of good stuff for update one.
We should probably start with where we got. Okay, because we just released new bits. And so in the new bits, the major progress that we made, I would say two major things. Number one, in terms of C++ 11 and 14, mm-hmm. we got C++ 11, we got to partial on what's called expression sphenate. You want to explain what that is?
It's something where, like, if you have to know about it, you're like, you're at way too low a level, but it really makes some advanced libraries work much better in C++, notably the Ranges library that Eric Niebler is doing lots of great work on.
Right.
Awesome.
I feel that we have to say, though, but we can't quite compile the Ranges library.
We are so close with update one to being able to compile that.
That's a new one. We made a bunch of improvements to C++ 11 const expert to make it more conformant. That should be a big difference. We've got off of the C++ 17 list, which, you know, we're not even late on that one, right? We have a first implementation of modules that we can use. The interesting thing about how we ended up doing modules, because we want to make sure that we can keep shipping new conformance features even in these updates, which we have never done before, right? So this update one is the first time where we're shipping new conformance features that aren't in a product, you know, that has a year at the end of it, right? This is update one, but we're adding partial expressions finae, and we're adding modules. So the way that we're going to go about doing this to make sure that we don't confuse people between things that are sort of in this experimental C++ 17 isn't done, so the feature isn't done by definition, right, is that we've got a new experimental switch that you have to throw in order to get module support. And as soon as those bits go out, the update one stuff, we'll get a blog post out that explains how to use that. But modules is great. Do you want to talk about it a little?
Yeah, it would be great if we had Gabby here. And one of the things about modules is that to get away from include files and to actually improve the build model. There's actually several benefits, but in a nutshell, if you wanted to name the top two.
Yes.
First is scalable builds, so we don't just have to build the same header 100 times or more reasonably 100,000 times in a project. You can do it once. And that makes your builds scale n plus m instead of n times m, which is a huge boon. And then the second thing is starting to deal with macros. Now, modules alone doesn't get rid of macros. But the more we can chip away at the reasons to use macros, the more we can chip away at bad stuff happening at a distance in your code that you can't even see in the source code. And by isolating the effects of macros, that's a big step forward. And so that work is also being progressed in the standards committee. So one of the things that we're doing with the work that's going into the update and beyond is to feed that into standardization. Now, the committee has to decide which way to go. But it's easier to do that when you have actual data. And then as that evolves in standardization, then we can track and conform. And we're already working with other compiler vendors as well to implement this. So it's not just a Microsoft thing, but it needs to be a community thing if it's worth doing. And
so,
that's the way we look at it.
So the question I have then, in some sense, what is the construction of a module, right? So like, is it just implemented code? Right, so the way that we do headers, and do you understand what I'm asking?
Yeah, think of it this way, because it's easiest at the 50,000 foot view to think about what do I give people. What I used to always have to give people is a lib or DLL and the set of header files that define how you actually can link with this. So now you give people an IFC file. And people will say, well, where are the headers? Don't need headers. It's self-contained. And so if you're used to things like .NET assemblies and other concepts in other languages, Ada, others, this won't be a huge surprise. If you spent your life with header files, this might be partly stunning, partly stunning and partly a revelation, hopefully more the latter. As we get this, we hope to see a lot of improvements unlocked in C++, which is a great language, being able to use it better.
Great. And it also sort of removes a little bit of the ball and chain of C that C++ has to carry along forever. There's nothing wrong with it. But I mean, it is a different language.
Yeah. And in fairness, it's not just about C. It's about existing C++. That just is the build model. What we'd like to replace, it's not anything against C. It's we would like a modern build model, and this gets us a long way there.
Amen. I mean, C is a beautiful language. It's just it's a different language, and it should be thought of that way. Bill has a question about how much benefit will a 10-year-old C++ application get by just recompiling it with the latest release of C++ based on improvements in the compiler optimizations, Jim?
Lots. That's a hard question. We've done a lot in the last 10 years. I mean, we've brought on vectorization, automatic parallelization, devirtualization with a complex type system for C++. That said, it needs to be very scenario driven. So the expectation would be that you would get a lot of benefit if it was CPU based. And I think also with all the profile guided optimization improvements that if you did profiling, you'd get a much better startup time. But again, I'd have to know the specifics about the application in order to get a number.
But are there particular new optimizations in 2015 versus the 2013 product?
Well, he's talking about in the last 10 years. The question
I take it as the application was old and he was
exactly.
compiling.
So you have old, like everybody who programs in C++, you have 10-year-old code base that you're working with because it works and you don't really want to change certain things of it. Windows, for example. And so I guess his question is definitely that. I mean, like what work has been done just to give us optimization for free because of the amazing work you guys have done on the back end.
A huge part of the investment with regard to optimizations really did go into vectorizing integer codes with complex control flow. So I gave a demo before at Build where we did a really important benchmark where we got, you know, I think probably 5 or 6 if-then-else constructs in a doubly nested loop, fully vectorized, and then we parallelized it on top of it. So, you know, if those technologies hit and you've got a lot of CPU-based work in your application, then we're going to speed you up dramatically there. Also, the profiling has been greatly enhanced. So if you train your applications and try to figure out, we then take that data and try to figure out where the hotspots are, and we'll even pack code so that it sits on one page, and then even within that, we'll try to make it so that we have certain paths from different routines right next to each other, and then we'll outline the code around that even. Awesome. And then we've done a lot of work, too, I think, in dealing with inlining and whole program optimizations like devirtualization, which is hard to get right in a production environment with all the special cases.
Interesting. I mean, it's an interesting world where when you said it's hard to get right, because it's amazing what you start off with at sort of the level that Steve's world is, yeah, and Herb's, where you have this beautiful or not so beautiful language sometimes, and you're trying to basically orchestrate complexity in a way that makes sense for the language. But at the other end of the day, it has to run on a machine that doesn't really care what you wrote up there at all. And so you have to guarantee to us, mm-hmm, that what we want to have happen actually happens. Maybe we don't even understand it.
That's a really good point. One of the things that I think Charles is hinting at is we don't ship any of these optimizations until they're on by default when we build all of the software in the company. So, for example, what went out for 2015, it had previously internally, before we RTM'd it, it had compiled SQL, 6 different versions of Windows, all of .NET, all of Visual Studio, and all of Office on Windows. And that's our test case, build Microsoft internally. And then that, what's cool is that we, of course, suffer bad days doing that, and that all accrues back to the retail customer. So not only is it rock solid, but it's also been further optimized for what we call real-world code instead of,
absolutely,
like a bubble sort.
No, I mean, and it's amazing, and you're compiling things that are a mishmash of C++ from the 80s,
yeah,
to C,
yeah,
and that's always going to be there in a certain context, to beautifully modern C++, where, yeah, they're doing like really nice things with template metaprogramming. I know Office does some very interesting things there. So I do want to move on because we have the wonderful Mark here, and he has a question from Margaret. Margaret wants to know, will the IoT stuff support other platforms, and how soon?
Yes, and very soon.
Okay.
We're actually looking at how we can support the non-operating system microcontrollers. In particular, there's other protocols like JTAG that are out there, and SWD. A lot of times those protocols, you need a hardware debugger that you connect to a special header on the device. More modern microcontrollers are starting to expose those over USB. But on the PC side, what you have is a GDB server that kind of bridges into that world. And so we are working on trying to talk to some of those GDB servers. We're looking at some of the open source ones. Mm-hmm. We're working with partners on some of the proprietary ones and trying to see what we can do. And we've had some stuff working experimentally, so I hope to get something out the door very soon on that.
Great.
And anybody who's interested in that should ask, because I'm willing to give you preview bits.
Awesome.
So find me on Twitter. I'm RobotDad on Twitter.
RobotDad?
RobotDad on Twitter.
@RobotDad.
@RobotDad.
That's right.
And just ask.
How'd you get that one, man? That sounds like
I had it a while, I guess.
When he was replaced with the robot.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Amazing. Right on. So @RobotDad, ask him questions.
Yeah.
Yeah, and honestly, we're very interested in hearing what people do with this stuff. I mean, the intention with the extension is that people can use this stuff to go out and do interesting stuff. By all means, tell us what you're doing. We'd love to know.
Just on that note, whether it's talking about this nice debugging GDB work, whether it's talking about playing with our latest updates, now the experimental stuff that we're shipping, including stuff that's going to be in the NuGet gallery, like the CPP core check. As soon as update one hits, go to the NuGet gallery, end of November and download CPP Core Check, and you'll get the guideline support library and the initial set of checks that we talked about at CPPCon. Mm. But also as we start to ship more things, like the Insider program that we hope to soon have for things like modules, we're shipping bits raw and more often in a form that's suitable to be tried and get feedback. We want to do much more of this. I am so glad, and I know everybody on the team and the company is glad, to see the end of, well, okay, in 3 years we'll give you something more. And in the meantime, you know, here's a service pack. Yeah. Because it's the best we could do at the time. Yeah. It's really nice to be able to have that kind of interactive feedback, and that feedback helps and it matters. So,
no, I love it. It's great. So C++ is a service, right? It's like Windows is a service. The thing that I would say there is, but we don't have to talk about it in this panel, but I have my kind of some feelings about making your customers your testers. But I'm not actually going to talk about that because we should move on to much more interesting things. And so C Sharp wants to know, why is C++ so hard to work with? And well, I think that's a fun and fair question that you can all dig into, man.
I think there's two main reasons. Well, first of all, I think it's overblown.
Yeah.
Because it's, if you look at the, a few years ago, going native, I actually showed data from looking at the languages, just doing word count, but that's a decent approximation, doesn't take into account interactions, but it's a decent approximation of the complexity of a language. And C# that was current at the time, C++ current at the time, and Java current at the time were within 5% of each other in terms of complexity as a language. Mm. Modern languages are complex because we have to do complex things with them. Having said that, yes, C++ is more complex, and there's two main reasons, and they're both backward compatibility. So backward compatibility on its own with C++ and C, so that your code you wrote 20 years ago still works. This is a feature, not a bug, let's be clear. However, second, part of that compatibility especially is macros. Macros make it very difficult to look at a piece of code, a line of code, and really know what it means without looking at the million lines that came before it. That makes refactoring more challenging. Doesn't mean it can't be done. People are building good tools for C++, but it does make it harder. Now, if you're living in a world like a modules world that has way less macros, guess what that does for toolability? Like, that's probably the single biggest issue with toolability today, and we're on track to deliver solutions.
Yeah. I mean, just in a personal level, like, I've only been the dev manager for C++ for, I don't know, like 16 months or something at this point. And I came from a world where I was doing a lot of C# programming. So, like, my very first gig was to, you know, get back up to speed, right? To get from my old C++ 03 kind of world into 11. And my takeaway from it, especially if people haven't actually really dug into the 11 and 14 stuff, is things are simpler now. I mean, if you want them to be. You can still build the crazy template metaprogramming thing, and there's value in that for certain types of developers.
For sure.
But large amounts of that, no one has to deal with. And when you write the kinds of code that you, the day-to-day stuff of consuming libraries, I think it's gotten significantly easier.
Quick question. Mm-hmm. Whenever anybody asks, why is C++ so complex? If somebody's asking you that in person,
yeah,
one of the first things to ask them is, how much do you use auto, range 4, and lambdas? If the answer is a blank look, you can delight them. Because the C++ they're talking about was harder to use. Mm-hmm. But it's something that's evolving and getting better and growing year by year. So it's important to understand it's a living language and to be able to use the new parts, including the better replacements for some of the stuff that's more complicated but that you can mostly ignore right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, I would say that, you know, Kenny Kerr, for example, who now works at Microsoft.
Thankfully. Yeah, that's so great.
He, when his modern CPP library, that's standard C++ that looks like C#. And what I mean by that is it's really, really clean.
Yeah.
I mean, now you have to do some IDL stuff and blah, blah, blah behind the scenes to set things up correctly, which can be tooled away. But he has shown that you can make a language like C++ pretty. And I guess that might be what a C, because when you look at C#, it's pretty. It's pretty code. And I think that's what Anders really went for when he was designing it. And he also based it on C++, by the way. Anders will even tell you that. But C++ has to do so much, as you're right.
But one of the reasons that's so important and that that's possible, and Kenny can do things like that, and many other great library writers like Eric with Ranges are doing, and many parts of Boost are beautiful code. The reason is because C++ is a great library building language. As we evolve it, we always have an eye on not just making it pretty and putting on more lipstick, that's good too, but also in making sure it stays good at building libraries and more powerful than ever, because that's really core to what C++ is good at.
Right. Those libraries are they're, you know, if you look at the, they're using every trick in the book from 11 and 14 in order to create the simplicity that you get as a person programming against it.
Right? Absolutely. And, you know, that's an excellent point. Yeah. So Felix would like to know, will C2, Jim, apparently Felix is a big fan of Jim's. And I know Felix 9 has been on Channel 9 for a long time. He's a wonderful, I think of him as the Mary Jo of the Niners, but he's very technical. So he's trying to get some stuff out of you, man. So will C2 support outputting other platforms, executable format,
so
ELF,
we get this,
et cetera?
We do get this question a lot, right? Okay. And so we absolutely can generate easily the other formats, but as soon as you start to do that, you get into a space which has enormous overheads. And so this is a strategy question as well as a technical question. And what I'm saying is we can easily do it, but there's doing it well, and there's doing it when we have the people to do it. As a, I think, a big showstopper for us right now.
Okay. So we haven't talked yet about Clang support. I mean, going native 2012, or was it 2011? I don't remember anymore, man. I'm getting old. But we had a beautiful demo of Clang running in Visual Studio, and people were like freaking out. It was really big news. The question I would ask, though, is why? Why are we doing this? And secondly, if I can use Clang in Visual Studio, can I use Clang in Visual Studio?
So there's a couple of stages. Let me start with the older stage, because I also can't remember if it was 11 or 12. I just said 12, but I think now that it was 11. But that demo was not done by Microsoft folks. That was by Google folks, by Chandler, who was representing his team, Chandler Carruth, representing the work of a lot of good people. You know, you get to be the front man for other people's work. We have that benefit. But very good technical chops to make it possible. And they've been improving that since then, because Windows wasn't as an important target. Clang is an important compiler. Well, can we make this work? Since then, Microsoft has also pivoted. Mm-hmm. And we've been doing work with Clang as well to enable that, to help with the exception handling, to make that compatible, that you can throw from one and catch in the other, depending on mix and match your compilers. As long as they go through the same C2, that the same backend, that makes it a lot better. And that's where Jim has been really valuable in mating Clang with C2. You know, that's not to compete with LLVM, it's just as a technical point, that's an easier point to achieve certain things. And so
sure.
So the question really is, why are you supporting Clang C2? So The reality is, I think, at the presentation that was done at Build, anyway, this year, I went over the complexities of having binary compatibility on all four targets that we have to deal with. So the ABI on Windows is different for ARM32, x86, x64, and that one.
So, three,
right, all three of those. So. And that has to do with exception handling, and it also has a lot to do with all of the different runtimes and frameworks that run on those three platforms, just the calling conventions alone that are special in certain places. Mm-hmm. So to get all of that right, you know, is really a long lead item. And we've brought these platforms up over 20 years. Nobody documented everything. So I remember a lot of people have asked us to document stuff, and we would actually have to go do an archaeological dig about those low-level ABI details that would, you know, take a really long time. So we're doing Clang C2 to allow us to get the fidelity at the language level, because applications are compiled for three different operating systems now with the same front end, right? Mm-hmm. And then we have C2 to get us binary compatibility across four different CPU targets. And then while we're doing this, we are absolutely working very hard to help Clang and LLVM proper without any interference from us to get onto Windows as well.
So the question there, this leads into an obvious question, which would be, are we giving back to Clang?
Yeah, definitely.
Because I know you guys are doing pretty astounding work on the back end. Are you giving back to Clang in terms of this is how you can, or even LLVM might be a question as well, right? Because you're, right. Clang is the front end we're talking
right.
about.
Clang is front end.
So, but still, I mean.
So one of the things that, I mean, Steve's team is actively involved in this, but we brought up Objective-C and shipped Objective-C first, which was ironic with Clang C2. And in that, we started bringing up a lot of the debug information, and Steve's team is responsible for that now and giving it back.
So I think in terms of what we're open sourcing, what we're giving back, the first thing we did, which you did a couple of weeks ago, was they asked us for more details on the PDB information. So Jim pushed the PDB header files that we have as
have a GitHub
in lieu of documentation back on the archaeological dig. We do have some header files.
Cool.
So we open sourced those. We went through that. We have an RFC that's out that is on the Clang lists for actually adding the debug the code view information that describes how to emit types into PDBs. We've got that out. We got some feedback on what they want, and we're working on a patch that we can submit to that. It hasn't gone out yet, though.
Cool. So I want to continue with questions from the people.
Sure.
Oni Obi. Oni, what's up, man? He's asking a question. I know Oni, so I can say that. What's up, my man?
I thought he was actually there or something.
Well, he's right there behind the camera.
Okay.
So his question is an interesting one. So will Visual C++ ever provide an API for its abstract syntax tree? So
yes, we hope so, especially as soon as we have one.
Exactly.
Okay.
So that's a glib answer. Let me start, and then you'll have much more to say.
Yeah.
So one of the things that you've heard us talk about for the last couple of years is modernization. Because C++, our compiler, had its roots 30 years ago in a time when you had no memory compared to today, where, you know, your memory is your L2 cache today and or less. And so you didn't keep a lot of data structures around. You just compiled a function, threw the data away. Compiled the function, threw the data away, get to code gen as fast as you can. Well, that was appropriate 30 years ago. So as we've been modernizing to help us implement more of C++ 11 and C++ 14, where you need to talk about the abstract nature of the program, we've been doing rejuvenation and basically re-architecting the compiler on the fly or parts of it to build in that tree information from the bottom up. And so we're partway through that exercise right now. And as we have more of it, then, you know, the obvious next thing and part of a compiler as a service would be to expose that API. You probably have more to say about where we are.
I would say, like, especially if you're very interested in the sort of history of how we got to where we are, Jim Springfield, who's a developer on the team, a longtime developer on the team, wrote up a really great blog post that kind of tells the history of why things are the way they are, how it was, and sort of the process that we've been going piece by piece to try to, I don't know, rebuild the plane while we're flying it, I guess. Mm. But yeah, for sure, we are very interested in making sure that we document the things that we have, but right now it's too in flight for us to do that.
Sure. And there's actually really good reasons why people would ask a question like that, because it enables a lot of powerful things. You know, Roslyn, for example.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it almost seems like it's an expected thing at this point.
And it should be, because you guys are moving more and more towards C# anyway. So one day you're going to meet in the middle.
Exactly.
One of the new things that's nice, though, is we went through the hookup of Clang and C2. Now LLVM bitcodes can be a universal interface to the Windows code generation.
Wow. Okay. So Jens, who we know as Meeting CPP Man, which is a great event. Jens always comes to the Going Natives, and especially the C++ Con, which, by the way, was a wonderful event the past 2 years. So he wants to know, when will concept support come to Visual C++?
It's on our radar. So we've done some early investigation. We haven't committed dear Steve's development resources yet.
But we keep talking. We did an intern project.
We did. So we've started, we've scoped it out. That's high on our list. Now, we need to also be C++ 11 and 14 compliant, so that's weighted appropriately. But concepts is a really big deal for C++. Mm-hmm. If you had to look at the two biggest features in the next 3-4 year time frame in terms of standard C++, in terms of their impact on the way we write code and use C++ as a language, concepts and modules are the top two. Okay. And I don't even know which order those go in, but they're both really impactful because they change the way you write your code and build your code and use C++ for the better.
Should we probably explain what concepts is for the
type system for templates? so that you can actually say, instead of, oh, I have template class something, some type, but you haven't said what you expect it to be able to do, that you can say it, which gives you better diagnostics, gives you overloading, gives you a far better way of using the language.
Absolutely. So I'm going to kind of keep on going through these questions, because as we expected, we have plenty of questions here. And so Greg wants to know, this is probably for Jim, but maybe not. What would I have to do to convert a C++ file created in Eclipse to a C++ file in Visual C++? So
I mean, hopefully not a whole lot, right? Like, I mean, one of the goals of, I'd say, the front end team at all up, and part of the reason why we did the Clang thing in general, is to make it much easier to move code around from platform to platform. The real difference between Eclipse and, like, you know, that we all speak the same language, but there's all these different build systems and stuff. So you have to create a project file. One thing that occurred to me from this question is we did add a feature in 2015 RTM, which makes it much easier for you to simply open up a file. We call it single file IntelliSense, where you go file open and you bring up that file, and then we create like a fake project under the covers, so that when you go in and edit, you get IntelliSense support and all the kind of IDE kinds of things.
True.
So that's another way.
And that question can be expanded on the amount of work one has to do to say take their Android code base, bring it into Visual Studio because they want to have a core C++ library implementation, and then all of the platform-specific junk can just stay where it needs to.
We've done a lot of work in 2005 and in the updates, and we'll keep doing these in these sort of IOOPs to make sure that people can create cross-platform code that compiles for both Windows, Android, and iOS. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons we did Clang, like Jim kind of talked a little bit about why we're doing Clang C2 as opposed to, say, Clang LLVM. But one of the reasons we're bringing Clang in the house in the first place is to make it so that if you have code that doesn't have, that has this sort of completely standardized C++ that can build on both Android and iOS, there will be less work to make it work with these compilers because they do have certain features that we don't.
Cool.
So just basically, summarizing,
go ahead.
With the three parts to the answer, write as much as you can in portable C++.
Yeah.
We're committed to making that work.
Exactly.
But then
in both.
Any platform specific stuff, you're probably having a platform specific implementation where you're using hooks for an OS anyway. So you may need to tweak the file of that to use any extensions that you might be using that are compiler specific. That's usually a small part of your code. The big one's the build system. And if you want to move build systems, maybe you're already using it. If you're not, you can start using things like CMake, which help you abstract the build system and make it not completely seamless, but a lot easier to move from a build system, say, moving to our project system from something else or vice versa.
Excellent. Jim, did you want to make a comment on that?
Oh, I was just going to go low level in terms of being pragmatic on the differences. You know, the big difference is IFDEF. And IFDEF through the source code all over the place for different reasons, but mostly because of compiler implementation details. Mm. And also, you know, different warnings. So if you wanted to be warning clean, so it really boils down to what are the reasons you have IFDEFs in there? If I was to be just very pragmatic to the question.
Mm. One other thing about portability, since we're talking about it, there was another question earlier that I noticed flew by about C99.
Yes, and that was
we still have limited C99 support. We haven't done much lately in the Visual C++ compiler, but we ship Clang. It happens to do quite a bit of C99 stuff for you. I actually don't remember offhand whether it's completely conforming. I think it is.
File a bug.
Let me ask you a question.
But we shouldn't be talking about C99.
Do a demo
we should be talking C11, which is 12 years
enough.
Sooner.
Right.
And so we have a solution.
But C11 is less than C99. What's going on here? 88?
Overflow error.
Yeah.
No,
overflow.
Done. So let me ask you a question.
Odometer wrapped around.
So this goes back to the Clang, because this Christina has a very good question. I'm sure the marketing people will love this because it's sort of one of those leading questions. Does your work on Clang mean you will stop working on your compiler? I mean, of course not,
no.
But it's a great question.
So just to start off, no.
Okay. But let me ask you this. If Clang already has all of the support, so here's the sort of the outer loop, right? We have the inner loop, and now the outer loop is looking in, and you say, wow, they have Clang in the front end now. Why invest any time whatsoever in your front end? Clang is better than your front end.
There will always
be
two.
Do you remember all those platforms that Jim mentioned earlier that we have to build before we even ever ship a compiler out the door?
Like, you mean little ones like Windows?
Yeah.
Little things like that,
Clang can't build those yet.
Yeah.
When so we have a compiler that's very standards conforming and very portable for that portable code, that's great. And we have a compiler that can deal with large Windows-specific, Microsoft-specific yeah. real-world code bases. Yeah. We need both of them.
Like, agreed. If I could be just like maybe just the slightest bit cheesy for a few minutes.
Do
like,
it.
I actually like we have this like responsibility to all of these code bases people have invested in over the years. And I want to make, you know, gosh darn sure that everyone knows that like we take that really seriously. Yeah. We know that you made that investment. We are not going to suddenly abandon you without, you know, something that
thus MFC is still around.
Yeah, exactly.
And, so to be
and
clear,
we improved it in 2015. Thank you.
The way this appears in future products is that there will always be two front ends.
Cool.
There can't, neither one can be everything that we need.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you a question. In the case of the two front ends, I'm writing code, right? Mm-hmm. And it turns out that the code that I'm writing, I need something that Clang has that we don't have. Mm-hmm. Is the front end garden of compilers, which is what the front end really is,
sure.
is it going to like automatically abstract that away from me and sort of no. say, oh, he's trying to do this, that's going to be Clang? Because at the end of the day, you're passing the
so
same
the beauty
stuff.
Of Clang C2 is that they're link compatible, right? So if you've got a compiland over here and you've got a compiland over here, you can link them together and use different front ends for them.
Beautiful.
Right? So
you answered the question, man.
And now to be clear,
yeah.
for all of your portable ISO C++ conforming code, we want that to be the same.
Yeah.
It should not
Our
matter.
Goal is to get to the point where you can't tell, but let's be honest, we're not there right now. Yeah.
So can I ask a question then of all of you? I mean, I know this, again, this is a real question. So do you get tired of people talking about Visual C++? It's C++, man. Visual C++ is some marketing name that you guys came up with in the 90s for an IDE part of Visual Studio.
You did, product. I thought.
Everybody has
I
a
probably
product
did.
Name.
But I mean, look, the
IBM
moral of the
story
is...
IBM has Excel, C++. Everybody has a product
but
name.
But it's just C++, and Microsoft builds a front-end and back-end compiler for it.
There's the standard and their implementations, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, the point I'm trying to make, if from a maybe I should go into marketing, because from a marketing perspective, if you remove away Visual from Visual C++, it doesn't become anything different than what it is. It's just C++. Now, it has a history of supporting platform-specific things like everybody does, but now it's becoming so open-minded, it's insane.
Oh, let me spill the beans on one thing. I wouldn't be complete unless I did. We are going to release just a command line only version of the C++ compiler and tools.
We did.
Yeah, we did that.
That's
right?
out. That's good.
Okay. Is it today?
Oh, man.
No.
I love it.
It went out a couple of weeks
ago. I thought I had Jim there.
Search
man.
For build tools for C++ 2015, I think is what it's
great.
Called. And that the idea behind that is it turns out people occasionally want to have machines that have build that they use for building on that they don't want to install the entire IDE.
Yeah. Crazy.
Who'd have thought?
Unbelievable.
And so that is a way for you to install just the compiler bits. You get
the
C1.
The compiler, the command line can be a wonderful place.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I'm a mouse
I love
guy.
The command line
honest.
Right now.
You know,
I
judge
it.
Me if you will.
But the thing is, we're going to be doing this really much more frequently and out of band as well.
Okay.
And so it's going to be a great way to, I guess, address your question about what is Visual C++.
Yeah, what does it mean if outside of the IDE? It doesn't mean really anything.
Well, I don't think so. I think okay. it does, but it does confuse people.
Sure. So we have more questions. I love all the questions people are asking. Thank you. Greg Roberts has kind of a long one. I'll summarize it. He's building a robot. He's going to and the robot's going to teach itself to talk. He's using a bunch of different programming languages, I assume. He's asking, how flexible is Visual C++? See, he's caught up in that as well. Mm-hmm. And would you recommend a Microsoft product that should be used for onboard computing that is compatible with Visual C++? So he wants to write a robot that can walk.
Hey, robot guy. Oh, sorry,
yeah, robot dad.
Robot dad.
Hey, is that a friend of yours? Do you know Greg?
No, I don't think so. I would say that right now what's compatible is what we just showed, right? So if you've got a Linux-based device, mm-hmm. you know, that is one of the things that you're targeting, uh-huh. then you Visual C++ will help you debug and be more productive. And something that complex, I think that, you know, the productivity gains that you're going to get from Visual Studio are really high.
Mm. Right.
Especially, you know, that depending on what you're doing there, if you are using other programming languages, well, we have support for other programming languages. So you can mix and match based on what you need to be doing. I think that there's other things that would be helpful there in terms of like the Azure SDK we talked about. If you need to collect some data that you need to bring up to the cloud to do some machine learning about how you're trying to get that robot to walk. Otherwise, there's things like application insights that you could bring you telemetry on how your parts are performing, things like that. In terms of compute, the only thing I can think of in compute terms is Windows IoT Core versus, you know, Linux on a device that could hold an operating system. And I think, you know, which one is right for you, you need to evaluate the operating systems and, you know, what suits your needs.
Sure. I mean, in a robot that's going to teach itself to walk, we'll probably need an operating system and not less
than
Linux.
At least part of it. Part of it. Sure. I would actually think that there would probably be a mix of components there where you may have something that's a bigger brain or a couple of bigger brains coordinating other microcontrollers. So
You know, plug it in where you have the LED on that thing, it'll probably be
yeah. fine. You just throw some algorithms at it, let it spin.
Yeah, that's it.
Throw a servo at it, whatever.
So Reiko would like to know, C Sharp has great refactoring. We all know this over and over again. And of course, you know, ReSharper has great refactoring of C Sharp in Visual Studio. I'm the best in the market. Will you bring C++ up to the same experience? ReSharper's trying with 1.1. They have C++ now. Everyone scrambles to get it. It works pretty well. And it actually works over really complex code. So you guys have also done great work on your team. Yep. Tell us a little bit about what you've been doing to answer that question.
Okay. So the first thing I want to say is for Visual Studio Update 1, when it ships out, one of the things that's going to be in it is what we call the experimental pane inside of tools options for the language services. You can go in there and we'll have a whole bunch of new refactoring things to play with.
Cool.
Also, a lot of folks don't know that we have things that are actually in the gallery that we've written that are still in that sort of experimental thing. We are definitely writing a bunch of code in this area, and as these things are coming online and getting more baked, we're moving them out of experimental and into the product. I recommend going on the gallery and looking for extract method, which is a great refactoring tool. And then the nice thing about this new experimental pane that you'll see in update one is that it will have a, you know, sort of one-stop shopping for things that you can kind of turn on directly with checkboxes.
Great.
Yeah. I'll acknowledge it, right? Like C# is easier to tool than C++ for all of the many reasons that we've talked about today, right? That it's a more complex language, header files and macros ruin everything. But effectively, this is an area we care about. We are spending calories on this. It will get better.
Just a plug for what's going on for the future here. The Windows team is doing a great deal of re-architecting and refactoring. And as a result, they're coming to us for tools for getting this done sooner rather than later. And a lot of that work, I think, is going to accrue back to the retail customer.
Office, too. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. And that work is done at scale. It's not just a little toy project.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, it can work.
No tricks. No toys.
We walk to survive home.
So one of the questions I have is, it's definitely not really, it's an IDE thing in some sense, but it really is the length of time it takes for a trivial C++ application to compile. And so what I mean by that is you still have this link. We have a linker from what, the 80s, the 90s? I mean, this was a question that we actually had a great conversation with Andre at lang.next. I think it was a year or 2 years ago. And we talked sort of about the history or the luggage of C++, if you will. And one of it tends to be this, the C compatibility and the linker, and that there's not a lot of work going on to innovate in the linker space.
He's done a bunch of stuff.
That's why I'm looking at him.
Oh, wow,
he's looking at me like he's going to hit me.
Man.
I know. I saw his eye. I could tell when Jim gets angry.
I was thinking.
So tell me, like, can we talk a little bit about the evolution of the linker in 2015?
Well, if you want to, it's not just the linker, because originally you were talking about total compile time, and that's a really big issue for us right now, and so I keyed in on that, but I'll come back to the linker right now. The linker has gone through a tremendous amount of improvement between 13 and 15. And usually what we found anyway was a big source of the slowdown was basically handling all the complex debug information that we wind up eventually putting into a PDB. So one of the things that we did was we actually created a new flag called FastLink. and it'll actually leave the PDB information in the OBJ files and then create like a dictionary to point back to them. Mm. And we just simply avoid moving pounds of bytes. But that's just one small example.
Is that on by default, or do you
choose that? That's a flag. And we've also done a lot to internally speed up what we can in the linker. So if you go from 13 to 15, you should see a big difference. The other thing that's, I think, incredibly important is Tenzin on my team led the an effort to do what we call incremental LTCG, which is extremely difficult, which when we do LTCG, it's a whole program analysis. We build a call graph, and then we go and compile. And that's usually how people compile retail. But if you're a game developer and you want quick turnaround, you're actually trying to be in a tight loop where everything is fully optimized, and then changing one line of code for an LTCG build might have taken 2 hours before, because for correctness, you got to compile the whole thing. Mm. But we've augmented the PDB so that we'll only recompile maybe one function out of 100,000 after doing an analysis that's really quick on this incremental PDB file. Mm. So there's a lot to be said for the speed ups that you get in 2015.
Oh, excellent.
You guys should...
Great answer.
In terms of like the build throughput and that tight loop thing, you guys sweat blood for edit and continue. You should talk about that.
Yeah, and so edit and continue, of course, is another big, big win that just came out. And I think update one has a really solid version of edit and continue. We really took a chance to try to get it out as, I would guess, an experimental feature in 2015. But 2015 update one, edit and continue, especially for x64 if you're a game developer, really big win on compile time and that tight loop, as Steve was pointing out.
Excellent. Wonderful. So let's see. Marcus, any plans for a more complete C++ library on par with the .NET framework? Now, there was a conversation that I know that you had in your keynote at 2000,
yes.
Going native 2011.
That was 12.
12.
Yes.
Okay. So let's talk about that. Where are we today?
So libraries still needs work. We haven't been able to move the needle much on that, except that we have been able to get more large libraries that are currently going through standardization. Mm-hmm. Ranges is one. 2D graphics is another. So those are going forward as TSs in the next year or two and should make the next standard
networking
or two.
Networking file system?
Well, file system also. Which came from Boost. That one's already published. That one's now we're looking at adopting into C++ 17. Mm-hmm. But 2D graphics, just like canvas mm-hmm. drawing, which is one of the things I highlighted in that talk. Yep. That's coming.
Great.
Now, having said that, in that talk, I had this embarrassing graphic showing how big the .NET frameworks and Java class libraries were compared to the C++ standard library. Mm-hmm. So the one we have is too small. That does not mean that those other ones aren't too big.
True. Right.
Those people who navigate the jungles of large frameworks and libraries also know the disadvantages of being too big.
Yes.
There is a sweet spot. So two things. We're working on the standard. We're also working in the background, but this is something I'm very interested in, but it's going to require, maybe modules will help some, but it's going to require a breakthrough somewhere, and maybe in the next few years we can do it, mm-hmm. is to get a package manager for C++. That's a major way of sharing libraries. I was mortified just earlier this very month talking to a group of senior developers that we had, not at Microsoft, but who were here and we could talk to internally about their experiences in their companies. So many times they said, I just need a library for to do JSON, to do serialization. I need a library to just do networking, a server or a service. And we say, well, why don't you use Boosts? And often the answer was, because it's another step. I mean, that's the most common one. If having that one extra step to add it is too hard, oh my, we need to do better. Whereas having a blessed package manager, you can just say, click, bring this, then it's very close to being an in-the-box experience. So I think that's the route to go, but we're gonna have to work on it for a few more years to see how we get there, and modules will help.
Cool, so let's try to get through some of these really, really fast, because we have 2 minutes left, unfortunately.
All right.
Let's see, Matt PD, how are you, Matt? Matt? I think you know Matt. We know Matt. So Matt, Microsoft has been looking into FPGAs for a while now, Microsoft Research Catapult. I'm curious, are there any plans to enable targeting these platforms with Visual C++? And I can't read it because it's gone off the line. But are we going to do anything with FPGAs?
I mean, yeah, we are right now, actually. And
that we can talk about, Jim?
Well, we have the capability to compile for FPGAs internally, and we also recognize that this is going to be a very important place for acceleration in the cloud.
Mm. Okay. And so Felix 9, universal CRT. Hey, one CRT for all. That's related to what we were talking about earlier. So like 2 seconds. 5 seconds.
The question, or you just want me to summarize what it is?
Summarize for people that you were talking about. We have one
universal
CRT.
The idea behind this is make it simpler to do deployment of your binary. So now the CRT is a part of Windows after Windows 10. So after Windows 10, anything you don't really need to use a Redist, and it's a stable, binary stable API that you can just use, and it will just work.
Great.
No Redists.
So right. Felix 9, Mary Jo wants to know, what's the safe C++ project working on other than GSL stuff? Okay. Ledger wants to, so Clang.
CCPPCon.
Yes. Will CCPPCon. Clang plus C2 support sanitizers? ASAN, TSAN?
Well, I don't know about those particular ones, but going back to the Visual C++ side of the house, later this month, go in the gallery and get CPP core check, which goes with the previous question for starting to do the checkers for some of the rules that we showed at CPPCon.
Awesome. So for Bruce's question about modern C++ for the Windows runtime, there is no timeline for it right now. All we need, read Kenny Kerr's latest blog post where he announces the fact that he's now working at Microsoft.
Yep.
Gee,
yep.
I wonder what he's working on.
Two meetings on that this week.
Right on, man. So it's a beautiful thing.
Yep.
And maybe CX will die a nice death. So this is what I will say. And there's nothing, look, no offense to anybody.
We're all for your marketing career.
I was.
My marketing career is already done.
I look forward to the day where C++ is so good at library building, we don't have to build those as language.
So we are now leaving. We're moving on. Thank you for all the questions. And I want to just say thank you for joining us today for the event. If you haven't seen everything, go ahead, and it's going to be on Channel 9. There's like 100 videos. You can watch it. You can follow the hashtag Connect2015, where you can keep the conversation going on. Cool. And I also want to thank you guys for coming and for you for standing there the whole time, Robot Dad, and for your excellent demo.
Thanks,
and to everybody else who worked here, and also Dimitri, Lan, and Seth. And Dimitri and Lan, of course, putting this event on. What an amazing job. So thanks to all of you. And on behalf of Microsoft, I'm going to read this announcement, but I'm just kidding. Take care. Seth and Dimitri, say hello and goodbye. Peace. We're done.